Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island, proud supporter of live music and driven to think big about beer since 1988. Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago, Illinois. Think big about beer.
You're listening to Sound Opinions, and later in the show, we'll pay tribute to Pete Shelley, the leader of the great punk rock band, the Buzzcocks. He died earlier this month at age 63. But first, we'll revisit our 2016 conversation with Geddy Lee and Alex Lifeson of the great Rush.
Wow, you don't get-
That's a little bit of the song Something for Nothing by Rush, featuring bassist and vocalist Geddy Lee, guitarist Alex Lifeson, and drummer Neil Peart. Now, Rush has built up quite a discography featuring intricate instrumentals, soaring vocals, and philosophical lyrics. The band formed in Toronto in the late 60s and released their first album in 1974, and since then there have been numerous incarnations of Rush. The early albums featured Led Zeppelin-influenced hard rock. Then they entered a period where they were exploring these science fiction themes on progressive rock sidelong album suites that the fans absolutely loved. Those were the lyrics by Neil Peart, and that is considered the golden era of Rush for many fans. In the 80s, Rush scored radio hits with songs like The Spirit of Radio and Tom Sawyer and entered into a synth-driven phase soon after. But it's basically those three core members, and the fan base loves them for it. I would say this is one of the most obsessive fan bases in the whole world, Jim.
It's almost a little frightening, Greg, and that's from someone who would consider himself a lifelong Rush fan. It is joyously geeky and cultish. You're on the bus or off the bus with Rush. There are so many reasons to love Rush. They've never stopped moving forward. They've never stopped challenging themselves. There is that virtuosity, but it's never at the expense of the song. Mm-hmm. It's always put to use in rocking hard. Drummer Neil Peart, I'm sorry to say, rarely gives interviews, but I'm really excited to have Rush bassist and vocalist Geddy Lee and guitarist Alex Lifeson as guests on the show. Alex, Geddy, welcome to Sound Opinions.
Hey, how you doing?
Great to be here.
Why don't we start at the very beginning? Junior high is when you two first met?
That's right, yeah. Yeah, we met in grade 7.
Wow, 7th grade. What was the musical passions in 7th grade for both of you?
I think we kind of bonded over a band called The Cream. We both really liked what they were doing, and we listened to their records and wanted to sort of emulate them. And people like John Mayall and the Blues Breakers. And,
Yardbirds.
Yardbirds, yeah, early Yardbirds, and Buffalo Springfield. And those were the bands that were kind of turning us on at the same time.
People forget how much blues permeates the catalog, especially on those first three albums, like up to 2112.
Yeah, that's really true. Mm-hmm. And even now, there's still moments where we really try to indulge that bluesy feel. But we're so restless as players and as writers, particularly me, that sometimes those influences get kind of buried under all the time changes and all the
complexities,
the techno abilities that you have in terms of editing your music together now.
But that's not really dissimilar from Zeppelin. When you listen to the Zeppelin material, a lot of it's based in the blues, but some of it is just so outside. And Jimmy Page was such a great writer for that reason.
Yeah, it's a launching pad as opposed to the final destination.
Right, exactly.
For you guys, for sure.
Well put.
The band has an incredible reputation as great musicians. I think the musicianship is one of the things that has been an attraction for a lot of the fans. Alex, let's start with you. Where did you develop your acumen on the guitar?
I was self-taught. I started when I was 12 years old. I didn't take any lessons until I was 17. And then I took classical guitar for a year with a friend who was a classical guitar teacher. And those were really the only lessons I ever had. So I just sat down with records and played them over and over again until I could figure out the riff or the solo or whatever it was that I was working on. And then committed it to memory.
Wow. So just deconstructing music as you were listening to it and trying to figure out how to do it yourself.
I can picture it like it was yesterday, sitting there by a little record player with all those pennies taped on top of the stylus and just going back and forth, particularly the solo from a Cream song, actually, from Spoonful.
Uh-huh.
And I remember when I actually figured it out and I could play it all the way through. It was one of the high points of my life, I think.
Getty, what about you?
Pretty much the same story. I was self-taught around the same age and originally started on six-string guitar. The group of basement guys I was jamming with needed a bass player, so they voted me as the bass player. I had to go buy one, find one.
Were you happy about that? Were you happy about saying, okay, kid, I know you play guitar, but now you're going to play bass?
Actually, I was. I was kind of excited at the idea of learning that instrument. And once I started playing it, once I begged my mother for the money to go buy an instrument, mm-hmm. I really fell in love with it pretty quickly. You know, as Alex said, I started learning all these great songs by The Cream and other people. And I quickly found that it was something I was quite good at. And that, of course, at that age makes you feel good that there's something you can do pretty well.
Your grandma wasn't so thrilled, though, I gather, Getty, right?
Yeah, my grandmother lived with us at the time, and my pals like Alex and John would come over, and we would practice in the basement sometimes, and it was an almighty noise that we were creating.
Very loud.
And she really could not understand what was happening here. She was very upset. You know, this woman survived the Holocaust. She was an incredible woman. She had to survive all that just to face the horrible noise we were making.
When did you guys know that it was really gelling, that you had something special, that the identity was forming? Because I look at the first two albums as sort of like you're stumbling along and you're getting somewhere interesting. And then I think, you know, of course, every Rush fan has their own analysis. But I, you know, to me, it really gels with 2112.
Yeah, I would say that's accurate. I would say the weirdness of Caress of Steel was a really important stepping stone to 2112.
Mm.
Because when we attempted that kind of failed sidelong experiment with the Fountain of Lamneth, after time we saw that there was a lot wrong with that. And when we set out to make 2112, it was, you know, to get it right. So, you know, I've often said this, and I really believe it's true. You have to fail in order to succeed, and Caress of Steel was super important for that reason.
My eyes have just been opened, and they're open very wide. Images around me don't identify inside. Just one blur I recognize, the moment shoes and feet. My way of life is easy, and it's simple all I need.
Well, and there was also the key change with the drummers. After John Halsey apparently decided that touring life was not for him, and left the group in 1974.
Mm-hmm.
What was the story behind Neil Peart joining the band?
Well, he came to audition. We auditioned three drummers at the time, and Neil was the second drummer. Here's this tall, lanky guy with very short hair. He looked very nerdy, totally uncool. And Ged and I, of course, were in our velvet pants and platform shoes, and we were the epitome of cool. And I remember thinking, oh my God, this guy's never going to fit in our band looking like this. And he set up his drums, and there were a set of Rogers drums, and they were very small, like small toms, a small kick drum, and they looked very unusual with this big, tall, lanky guy. But once he got behind the kit and started playing, we were both just so blown away. Jammed for the longest time, and then we sat around and we talked about stuff from, you know, literature to music to whatever, and then got back into jamming afterwards. And we spent the whole day and most of the evening with him, and we were convinced that he was the one.
And then once we got out on the road, which was a mere like 10 days later or something, that's how quickly it turned around. We didn't really know him. So it was a whole kind of learning experience. And, you know, he read a lot. He talked about kind of subject matter that we didn't concern ourselves with at that stage. And so it turned out he was a much more interesting character than we had bargained for. And mm-hmm. There was a whole period of getting to know each other. And that's when we got the idea that, this verbose fellow might be able to write our lyrics.
Did you ever think back of, like, if we had hired the other guy, one of the other two guys, how different Rush would have been?
Yeah, we probably wouldn't be having this conversation.
No, I'd be doing the plumbing in your house.
I love that. You do tell the story, Alex, that your dad really wanted you to be a plumber. In fact, he'd sometimes pick you up at the bars, right, and take you
on. Oh, yeah. I'd come out from the bar, and he'd pick me up at 1:30, standing out in the street, and I would go and work with him till, I don't know, 7 or 8 in the morning.
Oh, wow.
And then he would take me home, and then he would go to work at his other job. He usually had 2 or 3 jobs. My father was a very hard worker. Wow. But he always thought that the music was not a very dependable life, and that very few people make it, and that I should have something to fall back on. And plumbing was, you can make good money from plumbing, I'm telling you. It's in my name, the business, I put it in your name just in case. I'm thinking about it, you know.
I'm still there for you if you want it.
I'd like to be busy and get my old gangly wrench out and get at it.
We'll hear more from Alex Lifeson and Geddy Lee on their hobby, Rush, in a minute on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX.